Ways and Means Committee meeting, Monday, January 24th, 2005.
Only once.
We're going to go into the governor's budget this week, so we'll have the opportunity to chat with Hank, Teresa, and Darren. And I think they want to come up and probably first introduce their budget management folks that work just as hard, almost as hard anyway, as our legislative fiscal folks. I'm on the legislative fiscal team. But I do appreciate all their great work. We couldn't operate without them.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, I'm Darren Hill. I'm the administrator of the Budget Management Division. If you would indulge me, I'd like to quickly introduce my staff. Can you guys stand up one at a time? Satish Upadhyay, he does consumer business services, military, employment. Those are a few of his agencies. Jim Gores has a couple of the judicial branch agencies, and he has lots of the boards and commissions. Valentina Fomenko has many other boards and commissions, and then she has the legislative agencies. Cora Parker has general government type agencies, PERS, DAS, those kinds of things. Lisa Pearson has natural resources agencies. Christina Shear has the rest of the natural resources agencies, and then the Department of Transportation. Jan Dean is going to do part of the Department of Human Services, along with Pam Teschner, who will be the lead on Department of Human Services. Linda Gilbert is Public Safety Agencies, Corrections, and State Police, OYA. Bill McGee has Department of Higher Education and Community Colleges. Linda Ames has K-12 and Department of Revenue. And then Kelly Friels is the budget supervisor, and he has Department of Justice and the judicial branch and the governor's office. And did I miss anybody? Looks good. So you will see them, obviously, sitting at the table from time to time. Teresa, do you want to start?
Go ahead. For the record, Teresa McHugh, Chief of Staff to Governor Pulongoski. I will be brief in my comments, but I'm going to stick around for the presentation that Darren's going to do so that if you have questions really about Governor's thinking or how he approached it, I can answer those as well. But I know you have a lot to cover and really a fairly short time to cover it. So just quickly starting out, if you may recall, those of you who were on Ways and Means 2 years ago, that the governor, when he was elected, made it clear that he wanted the budget to be focused around priorities or around principles. And in the very short time he has from election to when he put his budget together the first time, we did some of that work. But this was really his kind of first real opportunity to put the budget together in a different way. So the first thing I want to say is it was put together in two ways. It was still put together with the legal, technical, audited budget and constructed in that way, and all of that information is available to you. But he also wanted information about what we do, why we do it, what the best choices are, how many Oregonians are served, and some additional information around decision-making about how best to use available resources. And so we sent out another set of instructions to agencies to ask for their entire budget to be broken down into programs and services or into functions versus just looking at, if you will, at the margins of the budget. And we asked them to fill out very detailed forms, all of which are available, although I myself was trying to find them on the website this weekend. I can't find them right now, but we're going to be getting them back up there as well. But very detailed information going through that. And again, first time through for all the agencies to really put it together in that respect. Some of them had gone through somewhat of a similar process with you last session and were able to use some of that information. Others, this was kind of their first attempt at breaking down their entire budget that way. But we did put that information together. And the governor used that as well as the legal technical budget to come up with his decisions around six principles. And you see those, I won't read through them, but you see the principles on the board. They do tend to follow along areas around economy, education, public safety, but again, asking agencies to break them down differently. One of the benefits of that, which I think you saw some of that last time, but was, for example, around the principle that talks about Oregonians having a right to be safe in their homes, their communities, and in state institutions, had a different group of people sitting around the table than when you just asked public safety agencies to come around the table. For example, some natural resource agencies have programs that's primary mission is around public safety. So do consumer and business service programs. So do some of the programs in human services. So it really brought together a different group of people to look around that issue and talk about what does it take to really ensure that Oregonians have a right to be safe. The other thing that was done was really trying to put more of this out on the website. We've learned some things. We're going to continue to try and do more of that and get some feedback. The website, at least initially, got a lot of hits. Of course, that tapered as time went on, but we're hoping to get people to continue to engage in that discussion. And that discussion linked to lots of others as well to try and get people to understand kind of context as well as individual information. And we did find that people did spend not as much time on it as you might want, but there was kind of a primer page, if you will, about what does the budget look like and why. And people spent about, you know, a minute and a half to 2 minutes on that page before they went to whichever spreadsheet was the one that they were most interested in, but trying to get that context piece in there as well. The other piece for the governor as he put this budget together that was very important to him was not just putting it together for 05-07, but to take the first look at what does that mean for 07-09, 09-11, actually looking for biennial out. And taking a snapshot today of if we balance the budget this way, what does it mean for those biennia? And looking at having a solution that doesn't just balance for this biennium, but leaves us in a position that's actually a positive one going into the next biennia. And that was, again, a very strong point for him in creating this budget. If he were here today, he'd probably talk as well about things that we didn't get to finish in this first round. I've been asked if it's prioritized from top to bottom, and the truth is within those things that fell above the line, time became a factor, and they aren't prioritized really from top to bottom, but we understand that's part of the process that's going to occur in ways and means, and we're happy to work with you on that. We see this certainly as an evolutionary process and that it can get better and better, but looking at information not just from the standpoint of making sure it's all balanced, but being able to also portray what the choices are and why we made the choices we did. So that's kind of a very quick overview of how the governor approached the budget. With that, I'll let Darren go into the slides that talk about the number side of it, and with your indulgence, I'll just stick around. If you have questions about this process, I'm happy to help answer them.
At this point, Ms. McHugh, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The only thing I wanted to ask, has the governor had a chance to look at the percentage approach to dealing with the budget, or did he just, in developing the principles, look at amount of need to each department? What was the philosophy into that, Teresa?
When the governor set the principles, and of course lots of people watching the process, there were some that said, are you going to set targets for each one of them? And he, in thinking upon it, said he did not want to start by setting targets because that presupposed what it should look like across those areas. So instead, it really was a matter of within those areas taking that first look at what does it look like and what makes sense, and then he himself came back and made choices across those areas. Another kind of effort that I think if the time had allowed that he would have really liked to explore further was doing something that showed, in effect, if you were to do targets, but you do three of them, one with much less money, one with more, and then one with about the same. And given time, we didn't end up being able to complete all of that work. But that was kind of a better approach rather than setting an absolute target.
Just one more, Ms.
Please.
Teresa, as you know, since you've been in budget and management so long, but if you look at a picture over a 20-year period of time and look at education and look at human resources education and the whole prison or safety, I'm trying to think of a word here I'm missing out on, we just did a flip-flop. And so we are spending less in infrastructure of human services and education and more in building prisons and the management of those as well. Any thought into that piece? Because But when I look at things like that, it's like the more you build, the more people will come, because we have to make a way to manage and take care of it. Any thought into that?
And I probably should have mentioned it. In terms of the information the governor collected, one of the pieces that was on there was asking if the program or function was mandated outside of the control of the governor or legislature.
Okay.
Direct control. His approach was to first pay for those things that are required by the Constitution, the federal law, or the courts. And clearly, you know, as you look at the Department of Corrections, it is our primary growth area over the last few years. If you look over the last 10 years, you would see K-12 obviously as a huge piece there too in the state school fund after the passage of ballot measure 5. But if you look, for example, at positions, state mm-hmm. positions, I think one of the things you would see is that the position growth in terms of a magnitude of position growth would be in the Department of Corrections. I think in this budget, and Darren's going to correct me on all the numbers because he follows them now much more closely than I do, but I think it's over $100 million in debt service in Department of Corrections of general fund just for prison construction that's already taking place, not even what's coming. So somewhere probably around 12 to 13% of their general fund is debt service. So there's some drivers there that were clear. But again, in the governor's approach, his first starting of the approach was not to question those mandates in effect, to say he is going to somehow put something out in this budget that says we are not going to fulfill mandates that are outside of our authority. Those come first, and then after that, with the dollars that remain, we will distribute them as best to achieve the principles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Sarah Morris and Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A bit of a follow-up question to Senator Carter's. Looking back at the 0305 budget in the close of session in August, I distinctly remember the governor making a pronouncement publicly that he would not accept anything less than $5.3 billion for K-12. And as you'll recall, we did appropriate 5.2 with the potential to earn another $100 million. So we met that requirement of the governor. Subsequently overturned by Measure 30. Can you shed some light on why 5.3 at that point in time in 03, and now we're forwarded to 05, looking to the end of 07, and we are substantially off that mark in the K-12 budget. Can you give some thought and rationale as to how that number was arrived at in the context of what I know is happening in my districts to be totally unacceptable in terms of the way we're educating our children and the resources that we're providing to them? So I'm mm-hmm. really curious as to see, to understand a little bit more the rationale behind the governor's budget.
Senator Morris, if the governor were sitting here, I think the first thing he would say is he would agree $5 billion is not enough for K-12. Having said that, the way he approached the budget was to say and to then follow through on a very disciplined approach that said it's been pretty clear after the last couple of sessions that the voters are not interested in paying more in taxes. So if this is the money we have, then we need to take a very disciplined approach, and we have to figure out how to get ourselves out of the situation we're in and build a better future. Having said that, again, the first thing he approached was, what are the have-to-dos in this budget? I think if he were here, if somebody finds a way to reduce the cost of incarceration, he would be very open to that. But in his process, not finding a way to do that, I think he came down to the position of, we have to do the best we can with the dollars we have. And in the list of those things and meeting a balance to his principles, got to where $5 billion was what was affordable today. That gets us back to a place where you can start building a future and start making investments, very thoughtful investments in the future. So, again, I don't think he likes the number any better than anyone else necessarily, but I think his approach was to stay very focused on not just the budget this time, but on the long term, looking for investment for the future, taking a balanced approach,
and putting whatever little bit of money he could into K-12, but understanding it wasn't going to be enough.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson. And
yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Teresa, for you guys all, your work. The things I'm hearing from my district are the fact that this governor's budget still does not reflect somebody providing services at the community level. It's still driven by the state agency who says, we think this program works the best. But my folks in my district, human resource, education folks are saying, you know, trust them a little bit more, and that this governor's budget did not reflect that.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Nelson, we met multiple times. I know Darren and folks did. I know I did with local government officials, both city and county, about the budget and about the budget process, and did receive more information than we've received in the past to be able to start to weigh that. But one of the discussions we had with them is the same discussion that I think you all started with K-12 about what kind of data and information is necessary to be able to work together to see if there's a better way to spend the dollars we have. And some first steps were made. There's a lot more work to be done there. And I appreciate the efforts they made. I think there's more to be made on both sides, and we're working together on that. But one of the things we do run into is not being able to have a lot of good data to share back and forth, and that's been a struggle, I think, for both sides, and we are working on that. So I would not say that this budget fully explains what happens to the dollars once they leave the state. But we did make an attempt, and it's kind of our first attempt on the executive side, to do a little more work about what happens once that dollar leaves the state in the form of a special payment or a transfer. For the first time, you saw us explain a little bit about what happens in K-12 once they get that dollar. Because, again, when 70-some percent of the general fund and lottery funds are going out in the form of a special payment to someone else, we usually kind of stopped right there and said, now it's gone and we don't know what's happening with it. And we do agree that we have to make this more seamless and have a better understanding of what happens and look for efficiencies there. So some first steps were made. There's a lot more to be done there.
Thank you.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. First of all, Teresa, just accolades for stepping forward with this budget. I think that starting out where we're starting is a very good place to start, and I really applaud you and the governor working with the concept of prioritizing services based on outcomes and having goals. I think that it is a good place to put budgeting in the state of Oregon. It's a good context to have the discussion in. And I also really appreciate your comments about how we're, just kind of one foot over the starting line on this process. And the further we get into it, I think the more we come to understand the complexities of what we're working with. And I appreciate your comments on the need for data, because I think that that's the one piece of this that's extremely frustrating. And we had a discussion in one of the sessions last week in Ways and Means around the need for good data and the problems that we've gotten ourselves into from policy perspective at the state, because we've been making policy based on data that hasn't been what turned out to be the truth, essentially. And I think that it is critically important to move the state in the direction of a coordinated data gathering or disseminating system that considers all the levels of government. So much of what we do in education and human services and public safety is federal, state, and local government all intertwined. And we can't make good decisions if we don't know what's going on both ends of those systems. One thing that I'm curious about is a lot of us have been getting calls from our community colleges because of the operating funds in the governor's budget. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the shape of the issue is that developed there?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Morgan, the issue is that, frankly, the budget was constructed technically the way it has always been, was supposed to be constructed, but in all the discussions at the end, there was a mismatch in terms of where the governor wanted to see the fund level at, and what ended up being in there. So it in effect was a mistake in there in terms of the basic support. So we are going to work on that with community colleges, and I would expect when you see us come to the table, we will come with a technical adjustment.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Was it a structural problem in the way that the numbers were rolled forward? Or?
No. No, it was not. It wasn't. I mean, the budget was constructed technically the way it has always been constructed. It was a misunderstanding in terms of on the policy side for the governor's office of understanding where the numbers have been built. And it just, frankly, at the end was a miss in terms of at the last minute trying to put numbers and budgets together, and frankly, just a mistake. But the numbers were built correctly in the way they've always been built on the assumptions. It would have been, a concern for your staff if we had changed the assumptions behind how they are normally constructed. So it was the normal construction of how that occurs. The governor would have liked to have made a different investment there. But that's what occurred. So, no, there was not a structural issue. It was really on the side of communication at the end and, frankly, running out of time to go back and check everything.
Thank you.
Senator Gordley, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would defer to Senator Winters if her question is related to the same. Did you want to stay on the same track?
No.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to go back to the question that was raised by Senator Carter, Ms. McHugh. Before we take off again on more prison expansion, how was the governor convinced that all available beds inside and outside the correction system as we know it are being fully utilized? What information tells the governor that creativity has been exhausted in looking at other options?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, in the process the governor used, using both the traditional data as well as looking at program data, and then frankly using his staff both on the budget side and advisors of working with the Department of Corrections and bringing others around the table who had an interest in public safety dollars maybe being spent elsewhere as well, asking questions was what led him to believe that the dollars, and again asking for some very detailed breakdowns of where the dollars are being spent in the system, convinced him that that was the investment he needed to make. Again, completely understanding that if this process finds a different way to be creative, I don't think you're going to see the governor have a problem with the spending the dollars in some other way if this body finds a way to do that. But again, his process, he was convinced through all of that work by different groups and looking at national data that it was the amount that the department needed to function.
If I may follow up.
Sure.
Ms. McHugh, your response addresses looking at data, national and other data. My question is also about looking at all possible available bed space inside and outside the correction system as we know it. Could you address that piece of the question?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, there was a discussion of some of the other beds that theoretically would be available and a discussion of how they matched up to the needs of the department and whether or not they were appropriate for what was needed or whether or not they actually would end up not being appropriate or costing more money. So there was an examination. I can't tell you today when you get into the detail, others will answer better, whether it looked at absolutely all bed space, but I do know that was addressed in some cases.
That'll be satisfactory for now. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Teresa, when the governor set his principles, and I'm looking specifically at the one that deals with human services mm-hmm. and the most vulnerable with their basic health, did look at not only that principle and started beginning to prioritize, was part of the consideration the other piece of the principle, and that principle, other piece of it is to invest in economic development or to create and retain sustainable jobs, particularly as it deals with matching dollars, federal dollars, to the point to where if we take, and I'm thinking particularly about the Medicaid issue, and whether we actually in fact maximize that utilization in this whole process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I am not sure whether that the economic development group that met really looked in detail. I know there was a discussion of maximization of federal dollars. Whether it looked in detail and weighed them one against the other, I don't know how in detail that got. I'd be happy to find out, or as you go into further detail, see how that weighed.
Did that group also look at, given the our current climate of a high unemployment rate, which then in and of itself would probably result in a higher uninsured growth, particularly in medical insurance. Did they consider those factors as well when you put the budget together?
Senator Winters, I do know some issues were addressed around, or some evaluation of the uninsured issue did cross between those two sectors. I don't know quite how it ended up being manifest in the budget. I wasn't involved in every one of those discussions, but I do know that issue was raised and some discussion occurred about that overlap. In fact, overlaps occurred between many of these. What was interesting is as you got, in fact, the first group, which was a different group of people around the table talking about issues, it often led to other discussion of all the overlaps that really occur with all these principles ultimately having some place where they, if you will, intersect. And some of those discussions were more in-depth and some were not as in-depth. And maybe an opportunity during this session for us to work with you on having more of an in-depth conversation about some of those.
Very good. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. We've moved from K-12 to prisons to DHS, so I'm going to take advantage and jump one more time. Following on Senator Morse's question about the reduced K-12 number caused me to think about OHSU. And it was not all that long ago that we were collectively making a $200 million bonding opportunity available and discussing OHSU's role in driving a new knowledge economy and the development down in the South Waterfront and all the opportunity that that brought with recruiting clinicians and building buildings and looking optimistically towards the role that OHSU would play. Then comes the governor's budget with a very substantial cut, a 40% cut to OHSU. Could you help me reconcile the realities of this budget and where we were not all that long ago in terms of investment there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the first thing I would say is that the debt service for that investment continues, was never even a question mark, and is in there. So in terms of that part of the investment, that's there. OHSU was a struggle for us in the sense that being a public corporation, it's again one of these data struggles of how do we really look at what they do and interface with the state and what opportunities they have or don't have to use funds differently. And I will say they have been reaching out, I'm sure, to you, but also to us as well to say we've got to have more of a conversation. So information such as, and again, unlike any other agency, we're only looking at the pass-through portion versus their entire budget. And that was one of the issues for the governor is what opportunities are there at OHSU that are more of an option. Within the education framework, it became important for him, and part of it was a shifting to dollars on the front end and access with the opportunity grants versus the back end. On the other hand, now there are some very good conversations going on about different models, about what's happening there. Again, part of it's a data issue, part of it was timing, and part of it were hard choices. But again, we're continuing conversations with them as well, which I assume they're going to be having with you, and we'll be happy to have work with you on those. Thank you.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Teresa, you've briefly talked about the community college situation. State police funding is probably going to be an issue for us because the governor's solution requires some legislation. What would your do you have any other hot spots on this budget or problems where you can see that the assumptions may not play out? Where do you think the problems are going to lie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I would expect most of them have been raised already in terms of, and the truth is, when 95% of your budget is in those three areas, I think you've hit on the three areas that are the primary hotspots. I think, you know, one of the things that's in terms of, I'm thinking now through impact and kind of what have we been hearing from people, I think there's some concern that the salary package, given the freeze, et cetera, is perhaps a little tight. If you recall, it used to be somewhere in the $200 million range, and so at $130, I think there's some folks who are concerned that's not going to be able to cover the costs. I think that's been raised to us. Within post-secondary, I think there's those who would raise that there's other issues in post-secondary if you're really going to get on top of both access and quality, and that's been raised. Human services, I won't even begin, but obviously a lot of folks concerned about the future there and concerned as well, even though as we did a tentative budget, we tried to build those things in, but looking at the growing senior population and knowing that in effect human services, the dollars now of any magnitude are in three areas. They're in mental health, they're in seniors, and they're in the health plan. And so looking at that situation, all three being things that I think people would say all need investment, but also looking at the demographics and what they mean for the future is one of the things that, even if it hasn't been raised as much of a concern, is one that we are watching very closely as well.
Mr.
Last question, yes, Senator.
Because you just struck a chord. There was a recent report that stated that a majority of the states, their health care cost was exceeding their education cost. Oregon is not one of them.
Correct.
And that's, I think, primarily because of Oregon's previous policies of the work that we did with the Oregon Health Plan. And did the governor look at some of those kind of factors to make certain that we don't erode what we started to the point that we may have some of the same problems that other states have occurred?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, certainly in the health care area, that was a major discussion. And one of the things that was interesting in that discussion was, for those of you who have been around and have heard about the traditional appeals process that a governor has, which is agency by agency come in and explain the merits of their program and what it looks like. And the governor did not do that. I think his quote was something like, it felt a little bit like Santa Claus, but you only have three toys in your pack and you're letting everybody come in. But what he really wanted to drive was very good conversation and discussion about how best do you get there and what are the issues that drive. And so agencies actually came in together, agency directors, and sat around the table together and had conversation. And I know that was one of the discussions was, where is that, how do you make decisions, and what's that line that you balance where if you go too far, you end up in another situation. Healthcare, that was a quite a lengthy discussion on that, and did lead to some of his decisions and where he drew the line.
Follow up: was that discussion also the same with the long-term care system? You know, nationally, they're talking about some of the things that we're currently doing. I find that kind of interesting. I just happened to key in on the confirmation hearings for Leavitt, and it was kind of interesting because what they're talking about nationally is what Oregon is currently involved in doing. And so here we're doing a little bit of dismantling, and they're talking about trying to put in place some of the very same systems, particularly when you talk about the services of keeping people in their own home and some of those kinds of issues. Was that discussed as well?
Senator Winters, at the risk of having everyone know that I have no other life besides my children doing this, I spend quite a bit of time looking at other states' budget websites, other information, looking at the national organizations on different things to try and see what else is out there. What are we learning? And there was a website around human service issues that indicated all sorts of new ideas nationally. And so when I called them and said, you know, I want to explore this a little bit. One of the things that has been, I think, on one hand, both heartening about Oregon, but also then disheartening as we're looking at new opportunities, is to keep hearing, Actually, you guys already did that, and we're looking at you for a model. For those states, for example, fee increases, I don't know how many times I got calls about what did Oregon do during the 90s about shifting to fees, dedicated revenues where there's a user, because we know you guys did that during the 90s. We haven't done that, and we see it as a good opportunity. And so things that were already done, in effect, by this body before are now being done by others where they can have immediate cost savings. Every once in a while we find something that obviously is enough different that we have to take a look at it. Some of that weighed in. We need to do more of it, obviously. But one of the things we did find is that in those states, they still have an opportunity to save dollars. In effect, Oregon, in many cases, had already done that.
Good point. Senator Morris for the real last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a presentation last week from the Department of Administrative Services with respect to the state government workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some statistics that were presented of the approximately 35,000 state employees, excluding the Oregon University system. The executive branch comprises about 32,000. And then of that 32,000, the management to non-management ratio is 1 to 6.27. And I'm wondering, and this is kind of a two-part question. One, what has the governor done to look at those ratios and to look at how we can change them and essentially reorganize to do the same job with fewer management personnel? And secondly, maybe if you could shed some light on your government efficiency and accountability portion of the budget of $173 million and how that maybe plays into some of this, but I'm kind of curious what effort has been going on in the executive branch to look at those, particularly that ratio.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, Sue Wilson is probably the right person to give you detail. I know there is an audit process within the Human Resource Services Division to routinely kind of do some work auditing agencies and are they at best practices. I think that's an area that may actually deserve some more attention. One of the things that's always, as we go into these kinds of reviews, one of the things that's always pops up is what's called management. For example, all of the people you met this morning from Budget and Management, while they aren't traditional managers, are probably in that unit. So one of the things that I know in the past when we were looking at that to truly try and get to, do we have more supervisors than we need versus line workers, is to really look at a supervisor versus employee ratio. I know some work in the early 90s was done to get to a 1 to 9. One of the problems we run into are agencies that have 7 people. And, you know, I think that's an area where, again, the governor has said he's made some look at service delivery, but that was an area that we really, again, in the sake of time, did not get a chance to do as much work on service delivery, whether it be within state government and how you do some streamlining or with our partners to make some of the next steps there. So, you know, again, some review, but really relying on agency, on the advisors, on budget and management, and the review, the typical audit process to make sure that agencies are at maximum use.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. If you could maybe shed a little bit of light on the category by principle.
Again, when you get in and look at that, for example, the Department of Revenue, which is a good chance to move into that, would be in the government efficiency and accountability category. A lot of their programs would be a number, I believe, of the PERS programs are in there. A number of DAS programs are in that, although most of the DAS ones are assessment, not general fund and lottery. But by and large, we'd probably find a lot of Department of Revenue comprising that government efficiency and accountability. One of the things that we were very careful about in looking at the principles, having the benefit of getting to go through the process, is finding out that if you weren't pretty careful about saying to people, you have to tell us what the number one reason your program or service exists, is the number one reason public safety, economic development, or is it government efficiency and accountability? Because a number of programs otherwise came in and they do everything for all people. So this was really focused on what is primarily exists just for that purpose. Within those programs, there's still an expectation that people are conducting them in an efficient and accountable manner, but it really is focused on which programs or services exist solely for efficiency and accountability.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate the tenor of the questions, actually, of Teresa, because this is a very... These are the very very same types of questions you're going to get in about 6-8 weeks from every advocacy group and every agency out there when you go through this process. The tone of this conversation is very appropriate, non-accusatory, trying to figure out how did you do it so we can best learn how to do it similarly or slightly better or make some adjustments that the governor's office either ran out of time on or, frankly, didn't have the benefit of, you know, 20 people thinking about it in a slightly different way. So I would urge everyone to keep that same tone as we go through the rest of the governor's budget, and I would certainly urge you not to promise anything to anybody under any circumstances for the next 6 weeks. For that, Darren, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Well, we kind of segued right into the first slide here, and I will say I think about $130 million of that government efficiency and accountability is the Department of Revenue, at least from the general fund and lottery funds. But this was one of the first charts that we ended up doing as summarization here, and it was something totally different for agencies to look at the world by the governor's principles. So basically, I put this in here for informational purposes. Breaking it down this way is something that we had never done before. And so this was absolutely brand new for us and for the agencies and the governor's office. We then went and looked at it. Each of the governor's principles by all funds. And again, I kind of put this in here for informational purposes. You see some breakdowns here. I think the one thing I'd like to say is, and Teresa touched on this a little bit, was you had different players at the table. Traditionally, we've been in program areas. And so the education folks all sat around the table, and the human services folks sat around the table. And what we saw here was we had the same players at the table discussing each one of these things and the funding and those kinds of issues. And so some of those have already been discussed today, but it was an interesting dynamic that we traditionally haven't seen in budgeting. This chart was Teresa pulling me down the road, dragging and screaming. What's happened is the business community for years has come to us and said, why don't you guys do a 10-year budget? Show us out 10 years what the projections are, and we do it. Why don't you guys do it? And the answer is we probably should. And so we started to take this one on. The difficulty here is that making projections out 10 years, and I will fully admit I'm a numbers guy, I like the numbers to be right. And the one thing I will tell you right now is these numbers will not be these numbers when these biennia actually occur. But what we did here was, and I've had some initial conversations with the Legislative Fiscal Office, is to look at expenditures and how you project expenditures out over the biennia. The revenue numbers themselves came from the Office of Economic Analysis, who spoke to you folks last Friday. And so those numbers were actually fairly simple to do. The expenditure side is, of course, much more difficult. For one thing, any decisions that get made at any point in time get extrapolated and will change. And the farther you go out, the more those things will change. But what we did was we took the governor's budget, and we took the biggest components of that, which, as we looked at it, we know we have projections for K-12. We tried to build those in there the best we could. We have projections on prisons and inmate forecasts. We built those in there the best we could. DHS has programs that they've tracked. We've got inflationary issues with some of those, and we built those in there. I will tell you right now, just much like the process is brand new, this is a very new process with us. And in our conversations with the Legislative Fiscal Office, I'd like to make this model much more complex. Probably work with the folks from economic analysis, taking in some other issues to try to trend these things a little better. But this gave us a good idea, and I think it's a good first step. So what we built in 05-07 was roughly what the governor's budget is. I'm kind of rounding some numbers off a little bit. But then what you find going into 07-09 is that if you take a 1% ending balance, that you can end up with about a $408 million rainy day fund. The goal being a $502 million rainy day fund, or 4% of revenues. And basically the issue here was, if you remember during 0103, we had a number of revenue shortfalls. And towards the end of the session, the economic analysis folks came in and said, hey, if you can maintain a 4% ending balance, that helps with keeping you within your bounds with what their projections are, gives you a much bigger shot than the traditional 1% that we've tried to keep as an ending balance.
Question, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Darren or Teresa, just maybe if you can help explain the decision to make the rainy day fund a goal as opposed to trying to develop it as a mandate, you know, that we can, and then to why wait?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I think, you know, for example, if this body said, and we're very careful to make sure, or maybe we're not as careful as we should, but this is an additional rainy day fund, so it actually, in addition to the Education Stability Fund and an ending balance, takes you beyond the 4%, but more in light of looking at what happened during 0103 and trying to look out and say what kind of stability would have really been needed to keep us from having to make as many of the decisions that were made during that period of time to balance. I think in terms of the why didn't the governor do it in this first budget is really the discussion of it still being rainy today, and that as a first step, as it would be in any kind of situation where you've been in effect an overspending pattern to your needs, is getting back to a stable starting place, and viewed it as this biennium being that place to get back to that stable starting place, which is why, for example, you still see about $100 million ending balance versus all of that money, for example, going into K-12 or someplace else. In terms of looking at making it a mandate, I think the governor would be open to discussions here, but truly want to lay it out as a discussion place of starting, a discussion of how do you create a positive future, how do you get back to a stable starting place and create a positive future, and what should that look like. So that's something I think he would be open to a discussion of what does it look like, how does it form, but did not choose to do that in his starting place.
Follow-up question, does the 4% that the governor is talking about, does that include the $150 million that we currently have in the rainy day fund that we'll get every session, lottery monies that flow into it?
Senator Schrader, this would be in addition to that.
In addition to
right.
that. So it would be 502 would be actually be 652.
Correct. And frankly, you also want to take into account any ending balance as well. So you're closer to about a 7.5%. Again, which still would not have been enough to actually, you know, 0103 not have some kind of, as you recall, revenues were dropping by more like the 18% to 20%, but would have provided a lot more stability through that period of time.
I appreciate your last comment because we lost $2 billion, not
right.
$700 million.
Correct.
So well, this would help, certainly. And that's the goal. That's the reason we established our rainy day fund. So. Follow-up question?
Representative Wisner. Chair, thank you. Mr. McHugh, then you're looking at in 10 years, you're saying that the education budget would be $7 billion or $8 billion, you know, how are you, if you're taking half of the 16 would be $8 billion, and we're adding 1.5, so are we saying it's going to be $9 billion, or what are we?
The Mr. Chair, Representative Wisner, if you look at that investment for the K 16 line, in effect, what that shows is that by 09-11, you'd have over $500 million per biennium of funds that could then be, they are surplus over the, in effect, the rainy day fund and an ending balance that could be invested. The governor believes that creates a stability to finally start really making, by 09-11, a substantial investment in K-12. It's cumulative. So the issue is, if you don't spend it in 09-11, if you just left it there, that 573, it grows to over $1 billion. If you still didn't want to spend it and you wanted it to be more, it would grow to the 1.5 and 13-15. Again, where he would be is that you would start making the investment in 09-11, and so that would then automatically, your expenditure line would go up, and it's about $500 million per biennium that's really available.
Representative Krupp.
Teresa, good to see you again, and appreciate your comments today. I'm looking at the math up here. Unless my math is incorrect, In 2009-2011, if you subtract expenditures from revenues, not counting beginning balances or ending balances, I have a roughly $700 million of money that is left over. In 2011-2013, I have 1.1. In 2013-2015, I have 1.5. I guess I'm not understanding the investment. You're saying that 573 rolls into 1 billion, rolls into 1.5 cumulative totals?
It is, because if you don't spend the 573,
right,
then you have the 573 to begin with, and you take the 1060, and it's the difference. Remembering that the rainy day fund number, you don't have to add all of that each time. You're just adding the difference between what was there.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, if I may, I guess I'm missing some money here in my addition, and perhaps later we could sit down and go over that. I don't want to lengthen our presentation here, but the numbers aren't adding up for me, and I'm just a poor farm boy, and I need to have it explained to me.
We've all gone through these several times, but you're correct. It's somewhat complicated because some of it is cumulative and some of it is not. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good point. Darren, continue.
Okay. You folks talked a little bit about this last Friday, but basically this shows the general fund and the lottery funds and the sources of those funds. As you can see, personal income tax is by far the number one source of general fund. Frankly, Oregon is the number one state in the nation on reliance on any single source, and which means we are also the number one reliant on personal income tax, which leads to some of the volatility that happened in the past two biennia. As you look through here, though, you can see corporate income tax is number two. All other is number two, and that contains a series of different things such as liquor, gift and inheritance taxes, interest earnings, court fines and fees, and those things all combined. But corporate income tax is the number two sole contributor to the general fund. This chart's chart that we look at to kind of show the 90s and how we had general fund forecasts. This is from the Office of Economic Analysis. The dotted line that you see off to the right here shows kind of what the trend was forecast as of 2001. And you can see that basically it was forecast a trend at about the exact same level that it was during the 90s. As you can tell by the severe down line in 2001-2002, things didn't quite work out that way. I think what you're seeing now is for 0507, we're looking at about an 8 to 8.5% increase in general fund. And then in the out years, if you go back and look at that other chart, the revenues are increasing at about 12% per biennium. But we give this as kind of give us some idea of, you know, back in the 90s, you can see we had great growth. Now you can see that that's starting to flatten out a little bit more. This was another interesting area that the governor really wanted to take a look at. As we looked in the out years of doing budgets, he also wanted to look at demographics, especially for those areas that are currently being funded with the general fund. The Office of Economic Analysis, again, has some demographic folks, and we looked at these specific areas, specifically the growth of some of these things that have some fairly severe general fund impact. I think the one that sticks out most is long-term care. And again, this is the percentage that it's expected to grow during the next 10 years. So we use this, and I know the governor's office used some of this information as they went through and did some of their prioritizations, but it gives you some idea of where your cost drivers are going to be in the near future. I think the governor looked at that and said, well, these are areas that, you know, some of the larger growth ones, we need to figure out what we're going to do now so that we don't have cliffs that we're going to fall off in the future.
A quick question.
When
you look at the long-term care growth, and I look at the prison population, in looking at that, is that a decline, or is what percentage is growing? Because, you know, if I'm thinking in terms of if I've got an aging population in the state, and the stats on corrections is that usually by the time the person is 40, 45, they've discontinued their criminal activity, so they don't show up anymore. And so that tells me that perhaps we should be, the curve may be going back the other way. Was that factored in this kind of equation?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Winters, yeah, what we tried to look at here was pulling the age groups that have the most direct effect on the current spending. But in the prison forecast and those things, all of those issues are built into it. But what we were trying to look at here is the forecast age for those groups that are actually going to be affecting the costs.
Then I'd have to go back to Senator Gordy and the Carter's question, and we'll take that up with the bigger group. Because then if we're building more institutions and the growth patterns aren't there, the question becomes, why are we building more of them?
May I, if I could talk about it real quick, I think we'll get to another chart here that I've got that shows about prison growth and how ballot measure 11 has it affected. It's not necessarily a direct population, isn't the only thing that's going to drive those things.
Mr. Chair.
First to Senator Gordley, then Senator or Representative Krupp.
Thank you very much. Could you please explain what's happening with the youth correctional population on your slide?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I think basically what we're finding here is there's going to be a forecast currently a slight decline in that population. All the reasons and the factors of those things probably need to be directed to someone in the economic analysis group. But I could be glad to get you that information if you'd like.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will have someone contact you.
And if I may follow up, if you looking at the K-12 information, what about the ages 0 to 5? How would that factor into the educational arena?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Gordley, again, that's some information I'd be more than happy to get you.
Okay. It is built in, though. That information, for example, when we're taking a long-term look, economic analysis gives us those factors for growth. So when you look at the state school fund number, for example, you always see us using the number of what's projected for that 0 to 5 population, and et cetera. And so as you look in the out years, that was built in terms of what factors they gave us those numbers.
Okay. Again, my questions are coming from a place of trying to understand in the fullest possible way what you are describing as budget drivers. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
They're good points.
Thank you.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. Explain the youth correctional population decrease, number one. And in regards to long-term care, how does that 31% increase figure change if you include 70 years and older rather than 85 and older? And if you're going to talk about either one of these later in your presentation, then I'll wait for the answer till then, Darren.
Actually, what I probably, excuse me, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Krupp, or Representative Krupp, what I would probably do is on tomorrow in the second hour, we're going to have the human services folks in here.
Okay.
And they can speak to all of those points for you on those.
That's fine.
We will also have the public safety folks in here on Wednesday, and they can talk to those kinds of details for you also.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On Friday, I was kind of picking out a revenue question, and over the weekend, I've had a chance to think through the question and perhaps refine it a little bit, and I wonder if I could throw that question out at you two very quickly.
Sure.
I'm looking at our general fund and lottery fund resource chart that you've provided to us, and I see that corporate income tax pays $456 million. The question I have is it possible to do kind of a T account, if you will, or where we could put corporations on one side and proprietor and Schedule E payees on the other side, and we know what corporate income tax or corporations pay in income tax. Could we get a breakdown of what proprietor and Schedule E companies pay in income tax? And then now I just want to take it down a few thousand more feet.
Sure.
And then can we find out what do employees of corporations pay in personal income tax versus employees of proprietor and Schedule E companies pay in income tax? Okay.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith, again, what I would probably do is I will get someone from the Department of Revenue to get in touch with your office, and we will work with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and we'll get you some information.
What I'm trying to do is bring some factual, to bring back to the statement you hear about corporations' contribution to the state and small businesses' contribution to the state. Not trying to provide any commentary, just to try and truly provide some fact.
No, I understand. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Okay, this is the more traditional chart that we have shown by program area. And again, the question is always, why do we always talk about education, public safety, and human services when we talk about cutting the general fund budget? Well, as you can see here, 93% of the governor's budget falls into those three categories, 55% being education. These numbers, and I'll show you another chart here in just a little bit, have fallen into these categories for probably some specific reasons. But basically, when you look at this, and you can see that 7% of all the rest of government falls into these categories, the reason we always talk about the big three is the reasons given here. We throw this chart in here, and I know it's busy and I apologize, but it's kind of nice to go back and look over time. If you look, the governor's budget is in the lower right-hand corner. It basically follows the chart that you just saw. But if you go back and look at 89-91, you'll see some interesting trends here. 89-91 was before we had ballot measure 5. It was before we had ballot measure 11 and before the Oregon Health Plan was being implemented. But what you can see here is back in 89-91, the state school fund took up 25% of the state's budget, and currently in the governor's budget, it's 42%. You'll also notice a decline in higher education versus from 14% down to 6%. Mm-hmm. And again, this gets back to some of the things that are mandated versus some of the things that have not been mandated to government. You'll also see an increase in public safety and judicial, and again, that's probably ballot measure 11 related, and I will talk about that in just a little bit. But you can see that things are fairly stabilized between 03-05 and 05-07, with basically just a slight increase between public safety and a slight decrease percentage-wise in K-12. This is another chart that shows you basically the same information, but I think it shows it a little better graphically. You can look at the far left in each one of the stacked bars is 89-91. And you can see that the general fund and lottery funds were spread over more programs back then. Namely, looking at administration has dropped significantly. And you can see again how education, human services, and public safety now take up the biggest chunks of the general fund and lottery fund. Ballot Measure 5, if you go back and look, Ballot Measure 5 passed in 1990. And that is the most significant reason for the educational growth. Ballot Measure 11 passed in 1994. And that I have a pretty good chart here coming up that will explain a little bit about that, but that shows you why the main growth has occurred in the public safety area. And then the Oregon Health Plan was started to roll out in 1994, and that shows why some of the shift has taken over to human services, though you can see that as a percentage, it is actually a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Folks are often asking us about lottery funds, and this has become an issue with the governor's budget. But what I want to do a little bit is talk about what the lottery funds do and how they're used currently in the governor's budget and how they've been used over time. You can see back in 89-91, there was a lottery funds were fairly stable, but a very insignificant in comparison with other funds of the, or with the general fund of significance of the actual amount of dollars that were being generated. What happened is in 91, video poker came in, and you can see revenues have jumped fairly significantly. What also happened during that time is we started using portions of the lottery funds. They no longer are fully discretionary. What happened first was we started using lottery funds to pay off debt service, and that's shown by the little white square in each one of the bars. And then the Education Stability Fund, which Senator Schrader talked about, is being used. A portion of that is being dedicated. It used to be 15%, and now it's 18% of the lottery funds are being dedicated for that. What you also see here is, if you remember, the voters voted to ballot measure 66. Parks is now dedicated 15%, and it's not just parks, there's natural resources programs is what it is. And that's shown here in the little green bar. And then we also have 1% is dedicated to gambling addiction. 2.5% of just video sales is dedicated to the counties. And another 1%, there's actually a formula, but it's capped. About $3.3 million last biennium was went to county fairs. So all of those are in that little, the darker green area up at the top. But what you can see here is that the discretionary dollars as a percentage have actually shrunk over time as more and more things become dedicated. The debt service piece that you see there has gotten larger. Some things that are in there is we have some economic development programs that are in there. State school fund is in there. There's some transportation programs. And then some littler pieces for housing, state fair, and higher education. But that gives you some idea of what's in the 0507 box for debt service. What this chart shows you is kind of the impact of ballot measure 5. What happened, and again, that was 1991. What you can see here is that the state's portion of the funding as a percentage has grown much larger. We've also shown out to the right, if you kept the old proportions, what they would look like. My guess is we would have never gotten there. The local funding would have never been able to support that. There would have the whole bar probably would have been significantly lower had things stayed the same. But I put that out there for informational purposes, again, showing you how much of the state's resources have gone into the state school fund. This gets back to what Senator Winters brought up a little while ago. Things that are driving the population, ballot measure 11's impact, and Linda Gilbert will be here on Wednesday to talk to you in much more detail about this and talk about some of the things that are here. But really what this chart shows you is a couple of things. Number one, that we're still forecasting prison population to grow at a fairly significant rate. And number two, it shows you that kind of the two effects of ballot measure 11. The upper part is the additional time for those folks who are going to prison. It shows a reflection of the additional time folks are spending in there with the mandatory sentencing. The lower portion shows you the folks who probably, and this is again a forecast, probably would have gotten probation, but under ballot measure 11 are now going to prisons. Mm. And you can see that population is starting to stabilize out, but the actual growth in prisons, or growth in inmates, is forecast to go on for quite a while here. And that's one of the reasons why we're building prisons.
Question,
Senator Warren.
Was there any discussion in looking at the principles and looking at the both the growth as well as the aging population in corrections as to what its implications for health care and to address that long-term issue?
Senator Schrader, Senator Winters, yes, and in fact, one of the issues in the corrections budget is they're increasing health care costs as prisoners are aging in the facilities. that is probably still not at its peak by any means, but certainly we are already starting to see that impact in that area. And some work has been done to look at creative ways to get services for inmates in the most efficient manner. But it will continue to be more of an issue. We're having issues like hospice care become issues for us now.
Continue.
Okay. Well, I will continue then. This next chart's an interesting chart in that it kind of shows some of the demands. And again, these are general fund demands. And it shows the difference between 05-07 and 99-01. 99-01 kind of being our baseline here, showing you about each one of those areas of how much the 520,000 K-12 students. We get asked these questions all the time, so we kind of thought this was a good chart to kind of show where we were at one point and what the newer demands are where we'll be in 05-07. What I'd like to point out, I guess, is you can see that most of these things think that we have larger demands, and demand probably isn't a good word to put in here, because if you see it says 35,000 fewer people on the Oregon Health Plan. That net isn't necessarily a demand-driven. It is where we have taken the program. This gets back to ballot measure 11 being a mandate, ballot measure 5 being a mandate, and the Oregon Health Plan not being necessarily mandated. So what we have done, and you folks know this very, very well, you've had to make some very tough decisions. And with those decisions, fewer people are now using some of the human services things. Again, 2,000 fewer aged and physically disabled clients. I just want to point out that that isn't necessarily demand-driven, but it's more of where the program's been funded.
Mr. Chair?
Question, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. How should we consider the proposal for lottery funds for Oregon State Police funding with respect to this slide? I'm trying to understand, again, the presentation of demands.
Senator Schrader, Senator Gordley. Those dollars are built into this, into the 11-9 that's out there. But the demand, so these are covering the demands of the things that have been funded with general fund and lottery funds.
That have been funded.
Correct.
Okay. It's just confusing.
Yeah.
Well, I'll leave it there.
You're not, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morissette, and then Representative Richardson. So. Senator Winters, you also.
Thank
Senator
you.
Winters also.
Chair, I wonder if you have figures on the projected components of increased cost of prisoners,
yes.
Such as health, but also what is the cost to house? What's the average cost of housing a prisoner for the day? What about? I like to break down the number of prison staff people. And what's the ratio? Is it 3-1, 4-1? What's the average pay of people who work in the prison, which makes up the cost? But just some breakdown, that would be very helpful.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Morissette, we'll be glad to get you that information. I'm sure Linda will cover all of those things on Wednesday for you.
Okay. Representative Richardson.
Chair, I have a question on two charts. You previously had a chart that showed expenditures total $11,877.3 million, and then this current one says total expenditures $11,973.9 million. Can you distinguish where the other $100 million is?
Oh, excuse me.
Let me show you.
It's very empty.
The first one's page 8.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Richardson, I do see a difference here, and I believe the difference is ending balance is figured in to one and not the other. But I would need to check on that. Because that's about exactly the right amount is the ending balance.
Okay.
So, but I'll check on that.
Good point. Senator Winters and Senator Gould.
I'll sit down with you, Ada. I'm very confused. And back to your general fund and lottery funds budget and your 9901 to your 0507 demand, so we can sit down and maybe walk through it, because it doesn't really compute for me.
Mr. Kutcher, Senator Winters would be happy to do that. Be very happy to do that.
Following up on that confusion, Mr. Co-Chair, could you just restate what it is, what understanding do you want us to take away from the presentation on the previous...
On the bars?
Yes. What's the general understanding you want us to take away?
What we're trying to show here is that there are more demands, and that not necessarily all those demands are being met, I guess. We have not been able to necessarily cover all the demands from where the health plan was in 9901. Funding has not been able to take care of that. We have had larger demands in some other areas, showing what the dollars that we are currently spending have been able to cover.
And this is a follow-up selective list in alignment with the principles. The governor's principles.
This is budget. It's just with the budget in general.
Okay.
It's a sense of,
all right.
I do have a question.
Yes, Senator Winters.
Then, given that I'm looking at the 104 more thousand people on food stamps, and our participation in it is basically staffing at 50%, because the actual feds pay the 100%. I guess I'm struggling with this 104 there.
Mr. Kutcher, Senator Winters. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. These are some drivers that we get asked a lot about. How many more kids are in K-12? How many more people are in the... And these are some categories that we have some drivers on. What we're trying to show here is there is some demands on the budget. You're absolutely correct. Food stamps, we do not have a large general fund lottery fund, but these are some budget drivers and some demands that we get asked a lot about. We tried to put this on here. I can understand your confusion.
I would assume that the reason this chart's here is to show that, the money hasn't gone up a whole lot since 9901, yet obviously there are a lot of demands. Matter of fact, it would be even more graphic if on the 0103 and 0305 bars you superimpose the one-time monies that we no longer have. You'll see it's actually, we're going the wrong way in a hurry with increased demands in terms of available revenue. So it's even worse than is portrayed with just the general fund lottery.
Mr. Kutcher, I think you're correct.
Continue. Thank you.
I'll see if I can confuse you even more. This chart, again, gets back to kind of breaking down things in categories, and Teresa touched a little bit on this, but again, you can see that general fund lottery funds, that currently about 67% of that goes out the door in what we term as special payments. To give you some idea of what each one of these categories means, personal services is people. Those are dollar costs around paying salaries and those kinds of things. Services and supplies are your typical office supplies, those kinds of things, desks. Capital outlay are your one-time larger items, large computers, bigger things. Debt service, I think we pretty much know what that one is. And special payments are those things that are payments that, such as state school fund, goes out the door. We do not have direct control over those dollars. We obviously control how much goes out the door, but once they go out the door, we do not have like state employees looking over those dollars. Give you some idea of that 67%, about 65% of that portion is state school fund, and about 22% is for DHS programs.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren, just briefly, can you give us that same slide for all funds in terms of expenditures by categories?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much.
Co-Chair.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Co-Chair, Darren, I have one question. As I look at this slide and it says that debt service is 2%, that would come out about $220 million, according to what it looks like here. We had testimony earlier indicating that last biennium it was $325 million for debt service and that it's going to be going up to about $350 million.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Richardson, my guess is that it's all funds versus just general fund and lottery funds. This is just a general fund and lottery fund piece.
Okay, thank you.
Good point. Representative Hanna.
Yes, thank you. Special payments you mentioned at 67.4, 65% of that being school funds, and then you said 22% to something else.
I'm sorry.
I didn't get the math there.
Human Services.
Yeah, but
Senator Schrader, Representative Hanna, what I'm talking about is 65% of that piece of the pie.
Of the 67?
Correct.
Okay.
If you take that and call that 100% of the special payments, 65% is for the state school fund and 22% is for DHS programs.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Doing good, Darren.
Tough job.
This is hard because I've done this for so many years that, you know, we do this our way, and I need to be able to explain it better. So these are good questions. Thank you. I wanted to speak just a little bit about all funds. Traditionally, we talk about the budget as being general fund and lottery funds, but obviously there are many other things out there, and we have lots of programs that are not funded at all with general fund and lottery funds. So I bring up this chart because I get phone calls all the time asking me about particularly the $48.3 billion that's in the other funds and federal funds beginning balances. What this shows is all the resources that are available to the state in 05-07. You see the general fund revenue number. Other funds are fees, fines, those kinds of things, usually dedicated for specific programs. Federal funds tend to be reimbursements for other programs that we have. And then you can see the lottery is a very small piece of the pie when you put them all together. But I get lots of phone calls about other funds and federal funds beginning balances because it looks like the state is carrying a almost $48.4 billion beginning balance. And folks want to know if that money's out there, why aren't we spending it? So I will give you the quick and dirty on an explanation. Of that $48.4 billion, about $42.5 is the PERS retirement fund. Mm-hmm. That obviously is dedicated. We cannot go out and use any of those funds. Another $1.5 billion is for unemployment. There is $1.3 billion for housing and the housing program. And then there's $700 million in the Common School Fund that's sitting out there. As you know, over the past two biennia, the rest of the ending balances and the other funds and federal funds ending balances have been looked at and have been gone through. But the chart's somewhat deceiving. What we found over the years is we go to national conferences and we find that a lot of states they give us high ratings for having a truth in budgeting state. We have a lot of things that come under the purview of the state budget that may or may not be in budgets for other states. The retirement program being one of them. What that does is it kind of skews your numbers at times because folks are asking, you know, why do you have those numbers out there and what does that mean? But the good part is, it's part of the state. We get to review it. It gets reported, but it's also somewhat confusing for folks at times. It looks like things that aren't necessarily the case.
I appreciate the graphic and support for all of us to realize that we communicate better with our constituents and people that give us the same phone calls that you've been getting.
Again, this is my same busy chart that I had before, but we're talking about all funds here. I put it out here basically to show you that the pie is split much more evenly when you talk about all funds. And it gives you some idea of where the funds are split. Again, you can see the education program becomes a much smaller piece of the pie. Economic development becomes a much bigger piece of the pie. And you can see human services, which has federal funds and those kinds of things, becomes a bigger piece of the pie. But I basically have added this out here to kind of give you some perspective. The one note that I would like you to notice is, if you will, consumer and business services is on the 05-07 chart, and it is not on the 89-91 chart. And I get the question of why. It's because back then they were actually part of the economic development program. There was no split amongst those two.
Representative Morgan had a question, I believe.
Just a point of clarification, Darren. Is this only the revenues that come to the state, or does this also include local revenues? An example would be in the K-12 system where there's local revenues that flow in. Is that reflected here?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Morgan, that's a very good question. It's not local money. This is only the dollars that the legislature has allocated out as part of our expenditure limitations and the state funds. So it would go back to those revenues and the resources that were on the previous chart. It does not include the local dollars.
So follow up. So, for example, the money that flows to the state, the federal match in the human services arena, that is reflected?
Oh. That's correct.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Co-Chair Schrader. Darren, good job. This is difficult information to try and encapsulate and provide to us.
Thank you.
For a whole handful of us up here in the 2001-03 session, we had to deal with cash flow. And the presentations that have been given to us talk about the revenue. They talk about the expenditure. One of the things I might suggest is in future presentations is talk about the correlation between the two and show how cash comes into the state and how it goes out. And part of the struggle the governor's office has, along with our co-chairs, in trying to manage the timing of those inflows and outflows, because I think that's also a significant issue for the state of Oregon.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Smith, good point. We can do some of that.
Representative Crow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren, two quick questions about the previous slide of all funds resources. I am assuming that under other funds and federal funds, I added up all the numbers that you gave us, and that comes to about $46 billion. I'm assuming the other $2.35 billion are lesser carryover accounts of various type that are listed in the CAFR documentation every year.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, that's correct.
Okay, and one more question, Mr. Chair. In other funds, is that appropriate to classify or think of that as fees? Or is it fees and...
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, I'd say it's more than that. And there are fees, there's fines, but for the most part, I would say you're probably right. There's those kinds of things. Another issue is agencies buy services from each other, and a lot of times those get classified as other funds also.
So it's really general fund pass-through would also be in there.
I believe
Mr. Chairman.
Let's let Darren finish it.
No, I just wanted to make one quick point, and that's, I think Ken Rocco pointed out to you last week that we do have some double counting, and again, it gets back to, you know, when funds go out of one agency into another, and that's some of those get counted then as other funds in the next agency.
And Mr. Morissette, Representative Senator Morissette, and then Senator Morris.
Thank you. Being new to the Ways and Means process, I'm follow up on Representative Smith's comment. Do you have a list of the source of all other funds? I mean, is that a difficult thing to do?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Morissette, no, it's not.
Yeah.
In fact, the Legislative Fiscal Office has gone through this.
Then the other thing, which may be more difficult, which funds are flexible in terms of, you know, are they, I'm assuming that they're not all strictly dedicated funds. There must be some flexibility.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Morissette, by far, the vast majority of other funds are dedicated to specific things. I think we've tried to look at some of those, and there have been issues with trying to take them and use them for other things.
Now, that would be listed along with the source of the funds that you would provide.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Morissette, yes, I believe that information is available.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Last session, we went a little beyond that. I mean, we really pushed the envelope as a legislature, and as there was an interest in really investigating that. And we may see some lawsuits as a result of our stretching our imagination as to what we thought we could get after.
I was going to add to that, Mr. Co-Chair, that we are going to be dealing with some residual issues that are resulting from that vacuum cleaning.
My only comment that I agree, Representative, my only comment is that those that are coming into this session where our budget's really tight, I would hope that if they want us to work with them collaboratively, that you might think twice about some of their actions as a result of what we did last session. I would hope they'd be collaborative again this time. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that university charges, tuition, are included as they're a direct charge and they're in the other funds category. So as we've reduced support for the universities, they've increased the direct charges through their tuition.
And that's Senator Morris, you're absolutely correct. Funds category. Absolutely correct.
Well, thank you.
Good. Excellent point again. Darren.
Oh, Mr. Kirk, could I have one follow-up? Darren, you talked about the double counting in the other funds, and I'm assuming you're talking about the other funds that are passed through allocations from the Attorney General and DAS and those kinds of things. Can you just give us a quick and dirty thought about what the scope of that is, what percentage of this would be counted both in the general fund and the other funds?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Morgan, off the top of my head, I don't know what that percentage is, but I have that information and I can get it for you, absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crow.
Thank you. I guess I'm trying to understand why you would double count expenditures. Because it clearly is not an accurate reflection of. I understand that it is in terms of accounting where one agency pays for services to another. I understand that rationale. but it seems that if you count the income and the expenditure in one department and then you count it and expend it in another department, you're mm-hmm. counting two expenditures when you really only have one.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp. My point I've been trying to make for a million years. Thank you. Yes, you're absolutely correct. It gets back to, I think, trying to make your accounting people happy and your budget people happy at the same time. But you're absolutely correct. If dollars flow through one agency and they buy a service from someone else, you're right. You end up with what looks to be inflated numbers. And that's why, getting back to Senator Morgan's, we do actually try to take the biggest chunks of those and separate them out from information in the governor's budget. So I have that information. I'll be glad to give it to
Thank
you folks.
You. Yes, thank you.
Historically, let me add, though, historically, one of the reasons that has been there is because, for example, you have entire agencies, in effect, DAS, the Department of Justice, that also go through this process here and have their budgets reviewed. So the process was to follow the dollar for that prison budgeting again, to not lose track of the dollar once it left an agency, but to also worry about what happened to it in the other agency where it was expended. Whether or not you can change the numbers to be able to draw those out and put them in a different chart, again, I think we've tried to do some of that because it artificially explodes the number. But that's been one of the reasons what was really following that dollar all the way through. In effect, when we are now talking about trying to follow dollars through from the state to whoever gets those dollars, it's kind of the next step of that, of following it to where it finally gets out in the economy.
Thank you.
I think another... You know, following up on Representative Krupp's point, I mean, a lot of the boards and commissions are all in the other funds. We really, you know, have no control over that. It looks like our state budget is huge and, you know, this and that, and a lot of our constituents don't realize it. It's the Vet Med Examining Board, the Accounting Board, the Radiology Board, all those types of things. So the accountants, because of this truth in budgeting thing or accounting, and we make it great grades, it is rather confusing when you're talking dollars and cents for programs.
Mm-hmm. Good point. My last chart just shows total funds over the last four biennia. And I guess what I'm trying to show here mostly is there's very little growth in 05-07 in all funds budget. And what the reasons are for that, and there's probably a million of them, but I think part of it is we've gotten to the point now where, and I know the governor has made this a good point, is he wants to review all fee increases and those kinds of things. And even though there are smaller boards and those kinds of things, he wants to put them through exactly the same scrutiny and make sure that they're justified in all of those fee increases and those kinds of things. And so I think it's part of that's reflected here.
This is a 101 question, and this may be the wrong, you two may be the wrong people to ask about this. Back on my cash flow question, is there any type of analysis that determines the percentage of expenditure that, say, occurs in the last 60 days of a budget?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator, or I'm sorry, Representative Smith. Yes, absolutely. In fact, asked by Yanim, it was about a year ago. It was about a year ago. We did an analysis on that. The very question came up, I believe it was during session, and we went back and did some analysis on those kinds of things. And if you'd be interested in that, I'd be glad to get you that information.
Perfect. I'd really like to learn that.
Sure.
I'd like to see that also, Mr. Chair.
And I think what we'll hopefully have is before we're out of session, well, usually the accounting's done by September or so, but I would hope that Department of Administrative Services would bring forward, you know, their latest information with that, because this was a priority of your Ways and Means people last session to encourage both the fiscal office and the BAM people to look at any change in last quarter type expenditures, you know, the spend it or lose it type mentality, to see if there was something that raised a red flag for us. So we are looking at that and hopefully get a little update during session. Hopefully. Senator Nelson.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. On your second chart, all funds by principal, you indicated actually that health care, we're spending 31% of all funds and only 28% for education. I think there was a statement made earlier that we were actually paying more for education, but if you look at all the funds, we're potentially spending more money for health care, you know, whatever that is. And then on the second question I have, your chart, it's approved general fund and lottery funds, where you talked about the 2% difference in the prison population for the prison budget, and then 2% less for the state school fund. And I was just doing some quick calculations. There actually is no figure under the 205, 207 under public safety and judicial. It just says 17%. But my figure showed that would raise it from 1.6 to 2.019. But if you kept those relationships, just didn't do the 2%, you'd still be raising the public safety by almost $200 million, and then you would have an additional $200 million for public education. Was that is that something that's going to be explained to us in as we go into this, anyway, you're talking about the prison population, and that's causing greater flame. But if you kept the ratios proportionate, it would solve a lot of problems, it seems like, from the things that I'm going to have a hard time going and saying, why am I spending more money on prisoners than I am in children?
Senator Schrader, Senator Nelson, again, as the governor approached it, he did not set targets by prison budget. He literally went through, and when it came to the prison population, again, knowing that it's going to go through a lengthy review in this process that may change that, but spent what he felt needed to be spent under the mandates that exist today. And that drove the increase of the money. And remembering in Department of Corrections, a substantial one-time fund shift, trying not to use budget language, but during 2003-05, a substantial one-time money, other fund source, was used in Department of Corrections that also artificially drives up their number this time in terms of looking like it grew. I think it was 130-some million, I believe, of federal funds that were available that are no longer available. So when you look at the increase, that's a substantial portion of their increase. It's not increased program, but it's just going back and using the general fund now.
However, I would also point out that we have that same problem in human services.
Correct.
Also have that same problem with the Education Stability Fund and education.
Correct.
And so that's an interesting point.
In terms of percentages, they're different.
Right. Yeah. Just one more follow-up. This is not in your charts, but I think in the governor's budget, when I was looking at all of the funds, at one point it indicated there was like a 17% cost for administration costs. It just seemed to me to be high. And somebody in our previous testimony has indicated that, well, there's other things you have to consider about our administrative costs. But I'd like, at some point, to get some information about how you came to that 17% figure and if it's reasonable.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Nelson, your point's a good one. Over the years, having a definition of administration is something that's been very difficult to actually come to that covers all 90 agencies. And by definition, I think what you're seeing for administration in there is the agencies that fit into that program area, which is the Department of Administrative Services, which does things like services all the debt for some of the statewide issues, and you've got Department of Revenue and those kinds of things in there. But what we really, one of our goals to do is to strive and try to really define administration so that you can go through the budget, you know, on a statewide basis and say, by this definition, this is how much is administration and budgets. It's just very difficult to come up with a definition that will meet the needs for all 90 agencies.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions in that point right there. Is there any group that compares apples to apples nationwide in terms of states who have their amount that they're spending on administration costs? Are you aware of any group that does that?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, off the top of my head, I don't know. Comparing anything nationally, apples to apples, is pretty difficult because so many people do so many things different ways and have different definitions of what they do. But off the top of my head, I don't remember, and much like Teresa, we look at all kinds of things on a nationwide basis. I don't remember anything off the top of my head, but I'd be glad to look for you.
Okay, great follow-up. Sir, very quickly, in the 0507 all funds pie chart, if I add everything up with the exception of the other funds and federal funds balances, if you take general fund, other funds, federal funds, and lottery, I'm getting $43.603 billion. But that slide there on the screen shows $42 billion. Am I off $1.6 billion, or where's the other $1.6 billion?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, what's the first one where you're adding the numbers up?
It is the 0507 all funds budget. That's the one with $91 billion up on the screen, the $91 billion pie chart.
Two charts before
then.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp, this is the resources. This is the funds that are available, the revenues, if you will. The other one is the expenditures.
So you're saying that we have $1.6 billion available to us that we're not going to spend?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Krupp.
According to that chart?
Again, I think what you're talking about here is you've got PERS and those issues where they still have to build their ending balances as part of those funds. So they have new resources coming in. They will have to continue to build equity in those funds and the loan programs and those kinds of things. So, yes, technically you're right. There is ending balance being spent there. But, again, it goes back to the same kind of ending balances that you have in this other funds and federal funds beginning balances piece.
Mr. Chair, I need some help here. I would like to ask the chairs to consider having that discrepancy explained to us in black and white, to be honest with you, because if we're really spending 43.6 because we are building ending balances, I'd like to see that detailed, because if you're talking truth in budgeting, if we're really spending 43.6, then why are we showing that we're only spending 42 billion? And I understand the explanation. I'm just saying that if we're going to honestly talk about total government spending, then it ought to include public money going in to build PERS, ending fund balances, and all of these other. And I'd really like to see that, if I could prevail.
Maybe by the end of the presentation this week, we could get a breakout of the 1.6 or whatever the number is. That would be very helpful. I think it's a very appropriate question. Is that it then, Darren?
I think I'm done.
Very good. Question, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I'd like to ask both of you the same question that was posed to the Office of Economic Analysis, and it's around the lottery projection for line gains, the $120 million that's in the budget, but you know, they're funds that don't really exist yet. Why should we have confidence in the projection? Where does your comfort with the projection come from?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Gordley, while certainly this is the first time that a budget's proposed line game, certainly it's been looked at numerous times in the last few years, and lottery, the agency, has done several projections through the years about what they believe can be generated for line games. when the governor looked into this, lottery staff were brought in to talk about their projections. Again, they were very stable compared to what we had seen in the past. The $120 million was, in effect, their middle range approach based on just adding the line games themselves before other kinds of actions, including the discussion that's now taking place about commission rates, would be taken into account. So they felt comfortable that if they could take the action and their commission were to take the action immediately so that, in effect, they had a whole biennium, that $120 million was a reasonable number. As you go through your hearing and as they do more projections, just like all of the numbers that we look at in state government are projections of what we believe is going to come in, that will continue to be under discussion of how much would is thought to be projected, and certainly based on what other actions they may take, such as commission rates being taken into account, all of that will be updated.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a question about process the governor's office went through in prioritizing and applying the principles and prioritizing budgets. You've done that process within each department, health and human services, education, and corrections, law enforcement, it seems. But what process did you go through in prioritizing between those agencies so that you had some type of a comparison in applying your principles between, for instance, education and health and human services?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, actually in the governor's process, he didn't bring them in effect, agency by agency. They did go through that normal process through budget and management, and policy advisors had that information, but in effect he brought the agencies in around where they were involved in discussions around principles. So some agencies were involved in several discussions because they, in their scope of their work, they have a significant number of programs and services that actually provide benefits to several areas. And that's where you have that kind of discussion in effect along those lines and through those areas. He would be the first one who's here to say it was that first step, as we talked about, across the beginning line. If time had allowed, I think he would have liked to have seen further kinds of discussions and at lower levels that of both programs and services, and also bringing in additional folks that are service providers, et cetera, to actually kind of get into more detail in those discussions. But that is how he approached it and then ultimately made the call about where to draw the lines.
Thank you.
Good. Well, if you're interested in education, you'll want to show up till tomorrow's meeting and we'll learn about how the governor prioritizes education. For that, we are